welcome to the Golden Rod Podcast. I'm Ben. As always, I'm joined by fellow Pokemon enthusiast Connor to bring you some of the latest and greatest Pokemon news and a few laughs along the way. This week, we're discussing the Wii U and 3DS server shutdown and what it means for Pokemon. We're also discussing Niantic's tongue-in-cheek reference to 420, as well as their recent attempts to relaunch Pokemon Go. And finally this week, we're talking about players figuring out how to duplicate items in Pokemon Scarlet and Violet. As always, you can jump to a topic using the timestamps in the description below. Connor, hello, welcome, how are we?
Welcome back. Yes, I was actually just listening to the intro and you're like, as always, I'm joined by... I was like, you know what? I haven't been here for 2 weeks. I missed the last episode and then we didn't even do an episode last week because we were both just a bit of a state, really.
State and chaotic life, and it is one of those annoying things with life that you only have so many days in the week, and unfortunately other things are in life, and if you don't record by a certain date you will miss it.
We have like 2 days to record these, really. It's either Wednesday or Thursday, and it gets released on the Friday.
Yeah, and if we can't do one of them, we typically jump to the other one. And in the past, we've had to move stuff around to accommodate that. But on those rare occasions, neither of those days work, and it's just... Yep. Yeah.
I think we've done really well, considering...
We have. Considering this is a part-time hobby.
Yes. Yes. Like, considering this is something we both do for fun, effectively.
Yeah.
And we have missed maybe... 3 weeks?
I think three.
Years?
Yeah, three. I think three is how many we've missed, and three of those, I think, I've managed to get either Sam or Luis in
to cover,
now.
Yeah.
To cover just wherever I can. But obviously, you know, this is our, what we like to do, what we like to talk about. I don't want to bring in other people too much either, because it's like our little baby, you know?
Yeah. And it is, you know, we'd probably do a lot better if we started adding a bunch of guests and bringing other content creators in, but I just want to talk to my mate about Pokemon.
Yeah, and like, funnily enough, so the business I'm at the moment, we are looking to launch a podcast later on this year. Is it like it's just an extra avenue to drive sales through conversation. And we've been having some podcast training. And, you know, the team have been looking to me because they know I've got a podcast, and there's been so much stuff where I've been able to, like, tell them about things. And, like, recently we had one where, like, what kind of audio things are you listening for? What kind of turns you off from listening to a podcast? Of course, I thought, I don't want to just drive this conversation. I'll let the rest of the team have their say on a few things. And they listed two or three
sibilance
things.
The answer is sibilance, by the way, which is the harsh S's. Yes. Yeah. You guys won't have had an issue with that because I go through so much effort to make sure it's removed.
To DS it.
Much in the same way as we go through so much effort to make sure that when I kick off, it doesn't blow your eardrums out.
Mm-hmm. And there's so much that goes into it. Like, you know, the popping peas, which actually realize that we've probably got one of the worst topics for that. Like, Pokemon. Like, Pokemon, like it's terrible.
There is a reason we both use the Shure SM7B, which you will have seen many other YouTubers use, and we're one of the only people who use the big foam, the
yes,
big covering.
I have
for
to
it. Because I have to.
Yep. I see everyone else as the thin one, the beautiful thin one. Whenever I have gone to that, I listen to myself and go, no, I can't. Because all I can hear is all these things that the thinner wind filter. Yeah, it just cannot cut them out. Whereas this does a much better job. I must admit, though, that the thinner one does sound better. But it's that balance of, it sounds better. But when I hear, like you say, those plosives and other harsh elements, like the lip smacking, all these things that you don't just take into account. Anyway, the reason I was going down this route is because when we were talking in the business about, how long is the podcast going to be? And they were like, well, we'll record for about 40 minutes and we'll trim it down to about 20 minutes worth of content because we want short, bite-sized, you know, pieces of content. And it got me thinking about, we don't really do any of that, like, really digging into the content and chopping it all out and stuff, because of the time that would be required to do that, and what is the benefit out of that? I mean, yes, the listeners might get a better experience, but, you know, the metric shows that people are listening as it stands without all that editing.
I mean, there's two ways to look at it, really. Like, edited content, the same as anything else, lets you get to the point better. Now, for us, this podcast has always been a open conversation between two people. That's been the format that we went with. I mean, when we started doing this, I actually used to remove a lot of the gaps and the pauses and try to quicken up the podcast that way. And what I found is, although, yes, it was coming across quicker when we were getting to the point faster, it sounded a little bit less natural. So what I prefer now is going, no, if we take a while to explain a thing and you can hear the cogs turning, as it were, leave it in. Leave it in. Because the idea is that you should be sitting at home going, I'm listening to two people having a conversation. And the argument we used to make was, if somebody sat at home and wants to join in the conversation, that's it. We've won. That's all we want.
Yeah. And tell you how people can join in the conversation. They can leave a comment on YouTube, or they can on Twitter, Goldenrod Pod, hashtag Goldenrod Pod. They can also contact us via Gmail. I'm doing this off the top of my head. I'm doing quite well. Or contact us on the Discord channel. Of course, all that contact details are in the show notes down below. Get in touch with us. We like to answer people's questions.
Show notes. We've never called it show notes before. I like
that. No. Is that what it is? Like, that's what I refer. That's what it was called in the training that I did. I was like, okay, is that what it's called? Show notes. Makes sense, though.
Because we just call it the description, because we're YouTube first.
Yes, we are YouTube first, definitely. Connor, one thing I do want to pick up with you is, how was the Pokemon Europe International Championship? Did you have a good time?
I had a very good time. I was exhausted. I'm not going to lie.
I can imagine.
To the point where I think we actually missed the Sunday. We just didn't go up for the finals.
Because, did you not?
No, I was so tired after the Saturday. It felt really bad, but I realized I'm only really interested in TCG. And we'd have had to go up and sit through Pokemon Go just so we had a seat. And then because you had the train strikes on Monday, but Sunday travel was leading into it, and it was going to be a case of, it was a 4-hour round trip to go and watch effectively 2 hours worth of Pokemon, and we were like, we'll give it a miss. We spent all day there Saturday. I got recognized for the first time ever.
By who? Do you know? Did you have a conversation?
I stopped. I cannot remember his name. I apologize. I'm terrible with names. They did say they listened to the podcast, though.
Is it Jacrepid, Barney Chow?
No, so Jacrepid I actually met up with because they reached out and said, hey, I'm here. Would you like to meet up? Met up with them for the day. That was really nice. But we were actually just walking down the hallway and somebody just stopped me. I went, Captain Fidget. I was like, yes. Hello? Me? That's my name. That's what I go by. He's like, oh, can I have a picture? I'm like, I've made it! I've made it!
You have achieved just success in life.
That's
you
it. That's all. That's what it's all about. And it was really nice because he stopped and he turned to his mates. He was like, oh, yeah, he's a really good YouTuber and he's got a podcast as well. I'm like, you listen to the podcast?
Yes! We've made it. We're mainstream, Connor. We've done it.
That's it. Good time. Wow. So I apologize. I cannot remember your name. I'm not even going to pretend to try and work it out, because I'm just awful with names. That's not a you thing. That is very much a me thing. But you will live in my memory forever as the first person to ever stop me and ask for a picture. That was great. Thank you very much. It was exhausting. It was a lot of walking around, as always. They did have some really cool things on this year. They had a lot of more mini games and stuff aimed towards kids and stuff for them to do aside from the event. Which was really smart because they'd set it up to look like the Kitakami Festival.
Whoa, so they had that's amazing.
They had all the festival stalls set up at the back of the room. Very cool. Games, of course, not the games, the championships were, as always, entertaining. Unite went off. TCG was great. Got to see Tord Reklev win for the first time. So for those
is this
of you
the
who-
person that is? I think we've spoken about this person that they've been. They've like gotten to the semifinals, quarterfinals, finals a lot, but never won.
Not quite. So Tord Reklev is like the very possibly the best TCG player of all time. Certainly the best TCG player of modern times. Wins championship after championship, or at least places in the finals or top eight consistently. But every time I've gone to go see, he's come second.
Oh, okay.
Every single time.
But he's starting to think that was a you problem. Like, this is me.
This is me. I'm putting him off. Just sat in the crowd going, boo!
He's playing his cards. He's just like, that Captain Fidget in the crowd. And he's just like, loses his cool.
So it was nice to see Tord win. Well deserved. I didn't watch a lot of VGC, unfortunately. It seems more varied this year than I'd seen it previously.
Mm.
Obviously, Ogre Pawn is massive this year. But a lot of the others have kind of switched out. I think some of the Pokemon has actually finally started leveling out, and there's variance to the teams once again, which is nice to
see. That is very nice to see. I said to Lewis when he was on that I think this is the third time that I've wanted to go and just haven't. Life gets in the way, and next year I'm determined to go, and I'm going to ask my daughter if she wants to go as well. Probably wouldn't do the full weekend. It's a lot, but I think if we, you know, go up late one day, go to the thing and then come back first thing in the morning, I think it's something that I really want to do, mainly just to experience it and enjoy it, potentially meet up with people, buy some stuff from the shops as well. Because you sent the picture of all the Meganiums that no one's buying.
Yes,
Meganiums apparently. Like, why not buy the Meganiums? They're the best. And obviously the game display that they had as well. Did you see that in person?
Yes. So it was as you came down towards the sort of main area where all the games were being shown and played. Or the highlight games were being shown and played. They had a section that ran from the original Game Boy all the way up to, I think it was the 3DS. I don't know. They did have the Switches there.
They did have
the Switches there, because they had the Switch Lite and things like that. And they had the specific Pokemon versions of the Switch Lite and things. But yes, it was the Game Boy, Game Boy Color, Game Boy Advance with their respective games that released on those consoles. Very cool to see. Very cool to see.
Yeah, there was one thing. So I really like them. I love when there is that. I love those kind of display elements of this is like history in a little box, almost, of this. This is the past of the franchise. This is what I remember as a child. You know, that big bulky original Game Boy and having Pokemon Yellow in the back. It's just a thing of beauty. One thing I did notice though, and I get why it wasn't there, is there was no Legends Arceus. It was just the mainline games.
Quote unquote mainline.
Which I was a little bit disappointed that it didn't get that kind of acknowledgement, but I guess I understand why. Because I don't think
any of the third games had a showing either.
Oh, did they not? Right. Okay. So actually, I'm looking.
It was very much a case of red, blue, Game Boy in the middle, gold, silver, Game Boy Color, Ruby, Sapphire, Game Boy Advance, Diamond and Pearl, Game Boy SP.
That makes sense. Oh, Game Boy SP. Yeah. Oh, that is so good. I love the SP. The SP, I've got one somewhere. I think I've got the tribal one, which was my brother's that I nicked. I don't know if he knows I've still got it. shall we move on to the first piece of news this week?
Yes, can do. Random thought, though.
Oh.
Out of like the original Game Boy up to 3DS, which one would you say is your favorite?
So the console.
Yeah. Which handheld console would you say is your favorite? or holds the most, like, holds that place in your heart the most?
They all do in different ways. Like,
No, choose your favorite child.
I've got to choose. Okay, I'm going to verbalize this because then it'll help me to come to a decision. So, the very original Game Boy is something that I wanted for the longest time, and I didn't get it until quite late on in its console life. And I cannot tell you now how I got it, where I got it from. I just remember at some point I had one in my possession. I don't know how I came across it. And just that, you know, I can just feel in my head the flicking up the button, the red light comes on, and the clunkiness and burning through the batteries. It will always hold a soft spot in my heart.
It just slides down, and
it's just like clicking it in. It's brilliant. The Game Boy Pocket and the Game Boy Color, I didn't have a Pocket, and Color I did have, but by that point, I wasn't that far away from the Game Boy Advance. And I remember having the Game Boy Advance and being really disappointed that I got the purple version, because I was a boy, I didn't want the purple version.
I loved my purple version.
I grew to love it. I absolutely grew to... loved it. Absolutely loved it. And there was, you know, that the R and L buttons and the fact that it was like a wide screen rather than a square box. Absolutely beautiful. And then eventually moved on to the DS, but I got the DS Lite. So I never had the clunky, bulky version. I had the Lite version, which worked really well. Despite the fact that DS is probably the one I played the most, it's the one that holds the least. Mainly because I didn't... It's weird. I played a lot of Final Fantasy on that console. Because the DS was the one that you could also play Game Boy Advance games on.
Yes.
They could like slot them into the bar. I played so many. And the stylus and everything else. The 3DS... I've got the 3DS XL somewhere. I'm currently still shiny hunting on Sun and Moon, Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon. So that holds a place in my heart. The Switch, I play a load of the Switch. I still maintain that if the successor to the Switch doesn't have that ability to pick it up and take it on the go, it's going to be a very hard sell for me to buy that console.
Which is weird, because I very rarely use that feature. But if you not really, no. Like, it's very useful in the fact that I have two docks, so I can easily move it from my living room to my bedroom.
Right.
In the same principle as when we go away, so me and my mates sort of rent an Airbnb once a year and we go away for a week, and we all bring our Switches because somebody can dock one, and then the rest of us can maybe... either all have controllers available or can play online and you've got a couple of people on their pads and things like that. So although I very rarely use it, the versatility is key for me.
Yeah, it's a bit like IGN. Every time there's a new console coming out, they run a poll of what do you want from the next generation most? Is it best graphics? Is it, you know, more games? What is it? And one of the options is always backwards compatibility, and it's always the highest rated. Like, everyone wants backwards compatibility, and yet there have been multiple console developers, Sony and Microsoft, come out and go, no, we've got the stats. No one plays, very few people play old generation games on modern consoles. It's one of those things where, and a bit similar to like you with that docking undocking. If I like the feature, I might not use the feature a lot. If you take that feature away, that's a minus in your box.
Okay, so I don't like what they've said there, and I think it'll bring us on to a topic that we've got later on, which may actually be worth throwing in here now. Simply because, yes, when people get a new console, they may not continue to play those old games on that console, but what it allows them to do, A, is initially adopt it, because yes, there's nothing worse than moving over to a new system and having to build up again. So not quite the same, but I'm looking at upgrading my camera at some point. To cut the technicalities really far down, if I'm going to upgrade my camera, it's going to go into a whole new system, which means I have to buy all new lenses. I spent more money on lenses than I've ever spent on a camera. And to buy a new camera would mean buying effectively two cameras price worth of prices because of the lenses I'd be buying on top of it. And it's just a lot to take on. And that's the same kind of thing that you've got to do when you take on a new console. If it's got no backwards compatibility, it's a case of, okay, well, it's 500 quid for the console. And then it's another 50 quid for the second controller. And then I've got to also spend at least 50 quid to get one game with it. And I don't just want to play one game. So now we're talking about 150 quid. So I've got a little bit of options between three games. Whereas, you know, that's suddenly we've moved that £500 price point up to £700+. That's a bit harder to swallow. Whereas if you go, no, you pay £500 now and you play all the games you already own. So sure, you can buy one game on the new console, but you play all the games you already own. All right. That's an easier pill to swallow.
Easier sell.
I may not play these games forever and ever and ever. And when it comes to buying new games, I probably won't buy last generation games and play them on my new console. I will just keep the collection I have and continue to be able to play them.
Yeah.
Now, the reason I think a lot of people don't keep playing old games is because they're not always available. And even games that you've had for years and years and years that you paid full price for will just have services taken away from you. And, Call of Duty. You know that Call of Duty game that you bought? And, yeah, sure, it has a campaign. But nobody plays it for the campaign. We only play it for online. And we've just upgraded to the new console. And, nobody's playing online on the old console anymore because they've all upgraded to the new consoles. So we're just going to shut down the online services. So now even if you wanted to play your old Call of Duty game, you can't. So now we get to have stats that say, oh, well, nobody wants to do. Look, that nobody's playing it. It's because it doesn't exist anymore. You sold me a game and I can't play it anymore. It's wrong. Yeah, I don't think it should be allowed. I think it should actually be written into law that if you're going to release something that has online services, you must dedicate to run those services for X amount of years. And then after that, the services must be made open source so that if somebody wants to keep running them, they can.
Yep. Agreed. Because that brings us quite nicely on a very nice segue into our next topic, which is going to be a nightmare to timestamp. I don't know if I do it from the start. I don't know. But the Wii U and the 3DS servers have now shut down. What effect does that have on Pokemon? Well, if you have any of the 3DS Pokemon games, you can no longer do any of the online functionality. Trading, battling, any of the trading amongst each other.
I assume you can still use Pokemon Home.
Pokemon Bank is still available for now. They have not given a date on when that will go down, but the fact that they have put out a couple of messages going, you might want to start looking at transferring your Pokemon, and I know I'm paraphrasing there, but we have discussed it previously on the podcast. That is happening at some point.
So does that mean you can trade? You can now trade with yourself, but not with anyone else?
You mean via Pokemon Bank?
No, so if I've got, say, Pokemon X, and my friend has Pokemon Y, I can no longer trade between ourselves.
Nope.
Because it's an online service.
Yes.
But I can trade to myself via Pokemon Bank.
Kind of. Because, yes, you can. If you have Pokemon in X and you move it into Bank and then into Y, that works. It gets more complicated when the way Pokemon Bank works is they are generation locked. If you move something, if you push something forward up the generations, it then can't go back. It's only Pokemon Home's one of the recent updates that allows you to move it backwards, which has some issues still. But Pokemon Bank, yes, it prevents that. So you're right, Connor. You can still technically trade with yourself, but it's very complicated, and it's not a workaround for the fact that they have just shut down these servers, which, granted, they are old consoles. I get that.
I understand that it costs money to run servers, and it's probably not a wise investment anymore. I get it.
But if there are a certain number of players still using that, why would you not keep them open? To please your customers, your fans, the people that invested time and money into your services and your games. And it leads us nicely onto what you were saying of there should be an alternative. And there is an alternative for the Wii U and 3DS in something that I found online that is called Pretendo. So this functionality, which, by the way, I absolutely love that name, is that it allows you, if you have homebrew content or software installed on those consoles, to install Pretendo, which allows you to use their service to basically reopen, unlock that online functionality. Now, what I've seen online is that not every single game is available at this stage. It will be a case of game by game, they will build that back up, they can start to use it. I think this is absolutely fantastic. I think it's a way to make sure that older games still have all their functionality, because if you've paid money for a game, in my eyes, you should pay for all of that game.
Mm-hmm.
Online functionality included. I understand that gaming companies sometimes will go, this game is 10 years old, it's taking up time, space, whatever those resources that impact, we need to make a decision that, you know, there are only 10 people playing this service anymore. We're sorry, but you know, the cost is, it's, you know, we can't keep this open. If that's the case, though, they should then go, over to you, the fans, do what you do best. Show your love to these games and these consoles. We'll let you do you. And, you know, if I do have a modded 3DS, and it does have that software available on it, and I've mainly got it on there just to mess around with cheats, because it's one of the great things that I love about games that are no longer available. As back in the day, Grand Theft Auto, I've completed the game. Huh, what is there to do? I've got cheats. I've got big head mode. I can give myself 6 stars instantly. I can give myself all the best weapons, unlimited ammunition, unlimited health. Nowadays, video games don't have that. But some very clever people have figured out, oh, but if you homebrew your console, we can actually get those cheats in. And I absolutely love it for just what I can do with it. So there's nothing stopping me now installing this Pretendo and unlocking that online functionality of the 3DS and allowing me to play it how the developers intended it to be played.
Now, to clarify, this isn't bringing back like the online store or anything like that. It is just game-to-game communication.
Yes. Yes. That's all it is. What's the harm in that? I'm you know, play devil's advocate here. Connor, what is the harm?
The harm, theoretically, is that, you know, how, if it's having to be done on a game-by-game basis, that implies that there's some level of coding within the game that's having to be worked around. And we've seen from recent lawsuits that that's not allowed. You're not allowed to get around those. That they are specifically there so that you don't get around them. So maybe that's a problem. The other thing as well is, you know, I was talking about Call of Duty. You know, we shut down those old servers. It encourages people to go out and buy the new games and play on the new games. Well, now, if you're opening up these old servers again and hacking systems, you're discouraging people from going out and buying new games and therefore costing the company money. I agree with neither of those statements, but I was playing devil's advocate.
Well, because that second point, there used to be a case that the reason you got the latest game is because it was an improvement on the previous one. It was common sense that, okay, I love the last one, but this one now has whatever extra functionality, extra levels, better quality of life, better graphics, whatever it might be. Those days are slowly, unfortunately, going away with games such as FIFA or whatever FIFA is called now. I know it's rebranded their name.
Has
it? It's literally, yeah, FIFA's no longer FIFA, but I can't tell you what it is now. Call of Duty, like, it's a lot of the same.
FC24?
Yep.
Esports FC?
Yeah, it's disgusting, isn't it? It's not
Did
nice.
They lose the license for it?
Possibly. I'm partly thinking that it's also an attempt to kind of escape from some of the issues of, oh yeah, we've just taken the code from the last game and tweaked a few things and we're selling it back to you at full price every year.
I don't know. The thing is, if it's a marketing stunt, I wouldn't have put esports in the title.
No, I wouldn't. No,
sorry,
definitely not.
EA Sports, not esports. EA Sports.
EA. For those people that follow EA, they have, I'm pretty sure they have the most downvoted comment on Reddit history, where they basically made it so to play as Darth Vader, one of the main characters in Battlefront, you had to either pay a shedload of money, it's about $30 or something, or you basically would have to put in hundreds of hours. And their response wasn't, no, we've looked at what you've said, and actually that is a lot, we're going to tail it back. It was, we think that people should have a sense of pride in unlocking this car, and everyone just did not like that.
No.
And
that was at the time when you had to, like, you couldn't even just straight up buy Darth Vader. You were rolling dice with loot boxes and stuff every
single boxes.
Time.
Loot boxes? Yeah, yeah, yeah. So this is why, if some people think that maybe we are, what's the, not pro-piracy. I'm not pro-piracy, but I am, I think...
I think there is a level where it becomes their own fault.
Yes. Yes.
I think companies who are anti-consumer incentivize piracy.
That's it. Yes, anti-consumer. That's the word I was looking for.
It's kind of the old adage of, you know, those who make peaceful protest impossible make violent protest inevitable. It's kind of the same feeling of like, do you want to make this easy? No? All right, we'll go around.
Okay. All right. So I think just to wrap this up then, unless you've got any other points, is, you know, despite me saying all that, I'm probably not going to use this functionality because the only thing I really use 3DS for is for shiny hunting, which, because it's just quickest and easiest way, and I can transfer it up via bank, via home. I might as well do it now before bank goes. But saying all that, despite the fact I don't use it, I still think this is a fantastic thing to have as an option to keep that library of content that people might have that want to continue playing it in the way that they love.
Okay, but you're talking about you don't use it, you only really use bank, and bank will go eventually. Why does bank have to go eventually? Why does bank have to go eventually? Why can it not be handed over to fans who want to keep the service running?
So, there is a bank alternative on homebrew consoles that allows you to do everything that bank does, but it is in no way... what's the word I'm looking for?
Monetized.
Pokemon do not endorse it. It's not monetized either. That's the thing. It's not monetized. Pokemon don't endorse it. How that works with transferring Pokemon into home, I don't think it does. It is literally just for the 3DS.
But yeah, I can imagine it wouldn't be great if you were moving them into home.
I can't see how that would work.
But, and that's the thing though, if Nintendo and Game Freak and Ilka and whoever else is working within this turned around and went, we're not running bank anymore, here's your alternative. We do endorse them.
Yeah.
And instead of having to pay to keep all these servers open, we pay someone to make sure they keep their nose clean.
Yeah.
We make sure our lawyers have to keep an eye on them. And that, you know, and the thing is, we're talking about things that are, especially with Pretendo and things like that, it's all open source code, which means there can't be anything malicious in it, but it's community monitored. And as soon as anybody goes, that shouldn't be in there, they get the word out really quickly.
Yeah.
So I think this is really the way things should be, and I think we're never going to get it. We're never going to get any sort of legal statute that says, hey, you have to do this. I mean, we might. Maybe Europe's going to do another big win, and they'll force this in. But we don't have the money. The big game developers don't want this to happen, and they've got the money to influence people.
Yeah. I think back to when, I think it was Halo 2, where they were saying, we're going to shut down the servers, and there was like 20 people that were just playing it constantly.
Just kept a lobby open.
So they didn't shut it down. I don't know if they didn't shut it down or couldn't.
They couldn't shut it down because people were still playing, and they played nonstop for about 2 weeks until Bungie came out and were like, yeah, okay, guys, well done. We get it. You really love the game. We're done now. Yeah. Stop it.
Yeah. But I think that leads me on to, I thought that this was only a recent thing. Like, in my mind, it feels like a recent thing of companies going, we're taking away functionality, whatever that might be, or we're just removing your ability to buy the game because of licenses or DLC because of licenses, whatever it might be. But thinking about it, this has been going on for several generations. Mm. Like, we have to look back at the Xbox. This has been going on for a long time of, you know, I don't know what proportion, but there is a significant percentage of video games now that cannot be played in the way that developers originally intended it to be played, because there's been functionality removed, whether or not that's online, whether or not that's something else. And Pokemon, you know, to bring it back to Pokemon, Pokemon's not immune to this. We look at all these previous generations, and, you know, one of the things that I'm a little bit annoyed about being removed, because this is one of the ways I completed my living Pokedex, was that the ability to transfer Pokemon up from generation 4 and 5 up through bank, up through home. Once bank's gone, you've got 7 generations of Pokemon that are stuck in those generations. You can't bring them up anymore. So things like, for example, people that might want, and I know this won't be a lot of people, but people may be thinking, I want the medals or the badges on these Pokemon, and I want to bring them up. I want to shiny hunt the Pokemon Rayquaza in Pokemon Emerald because that is where it was introduced.
Yeah.
Can't bring it up. Like, there's so much functionality that is being ripped from these games, but you only see a proportion of it because no one is invested in every game ever made. So of course, you only see, you know, the odd game here or there where it disappears or functionality disappears, and you think, oh, okay, there's a bit of an issue, but it's fine. I'll move on to the next one. But when you look at it as a whole, it's frightening and disgusting that these companies can just at any point go, that game that you love, that we like, removing it from the shelves. Gone.
I mean, the reality of the situation is nowadays you're not even really buying a game. Whether you buy a physical copy, whether you buy a digital copy, you're playing a license to play something for as long as someone is willing to let you play it.
Yep.
And that's wrong. That shouldn't be the way it is, because I've still got PC games from the 90s that as long as I like open up a, you know, I forget the word for it, basically run my PC as if it's Windows XP, it works.
It works.
Because I have the disc and I put it into my PC and it just works. And yet you go into like the 2000s and suddenly you're starting to hit online DRM where they have to check in with a server to make sure that you've legally bought the game, except from those servers are shut down now. So now I've got a brick.
Yes.
That I paid full price for. Point.
Yep.
So at this point, and this is what I mean when it's a case of anti-consumerism makes piracy okay. If I can't go buy a physical copy of your game and play it legally, I'll play it illegally. It's your fault.
I agree. Yeah. And that is why when I discovered Steam, I fell in love with Steam, because I had Command & Conquer Red Alert 2. Used to love that game.
Yep.
However, you know, PCs nowadays, they don't have disk drives. And even if I had a PC with a disk drive, I've got a feeling if I tried to put that game in that, it would just go, hold on. Like, what's this? What's this? What is this like? What's this PC that you're playing it on? Like, we didn't recognize any of this. It's not going to play. And then I discovered Steam, and it's like, I can buy that game for $2.99 in a sale. This is amazing. This is absolutely fantastic. But even Steam has that issue of, at any point, because of licenses, because of issues, whatever it might be, they can just go, that content that you paid for, yeah, it's gone. Sorry. Like, oh no, you never bought it. You paid for it, but you never owned it. You just licensed the ability to play it while, you know, you're in the good graces of the gaming overlords or whoever. And
which is not how it's sold. Which is where I take issue.
Yes. If they were very clear of, you know, if you went to Steam and it didn't say buy, it said license, I think a lot more people's eyes would open and go, what do you mean license? I'm buying it. No, you're licensing it. And I think there needs to be a clear shift in the gaming industry that buying is buying. If you buy, for example, Guitar Hero, and the reason I'm bringing up Guitar Hero is they have licenses for their songs. So, you know, Guitar Hero is a rhythm game, and you can buy as DLC loads of additional songs to play. Those songs are licensed, which means at some point in the future, they will be taken down from the store. It's already happened, not to all of them, but to quite a lot of them. But you as a player, if you buy that game and then buy the DLC, and then let's say your console crashes, your console's dead and you need to, oh, I need to buy this again. Okay, so then you buy a new console and you go to the store to download it. That store will greet you with, this content is no longer available. But you've paid for that.
Yeah, it's my content.
My content. Now, I don't care about your licenses. I don't care about your agreements. I paid for something
realistically,
and you can't deliver
on
it.
If I bought a CD or a tape or a record, and the studio and the artist fell out, and the studio were no longer allowed to print that CD, I don't care. I have the CD. I have it. It's mine. I will play it in my car. I will play it in my home. It's mine. I will play it until it dies.
Yep. Yep. It's going to be interesting to see where this goes with the Switch 2. Because all the rumors about backwards compatibility makes me think, hopefully then, the Switch side, this not the Switch 2 or the success, whatever it's called, the Switch side, hopefully their servers stay online longer, because it's like, if it's backwards compatible, you want to be able to market you as, not only can you get this console for all your new games, you can get them from all your previous games, and look, all those previous games, you can play all the functionality on them. But it won't be forever, because the Switch 3 will come out.
I mean, you think there are literally Pokemon games you could not even get legally now. Like, we've talked a lot of times about, like, Pokemon Black and White costing 150 quid in a secondhand shop. It's ridiculous. Because, again, it's not even the same game that was sold at full price when it released. Because it doesn't have any of the online functionality anymore. But, say, for instance, you wanted to go play, is it Pokemon Ranch? The Pokemon
Wii? Yeah, that is a game, yeah.
Or yes. Pokemon Rumble or something like that, which were Wii Online exclusives. You just can't get them anymore.
Can't get them.
Which means there's large parts of Pokemon's history that you were just not entitled legally to go and experience. Is that okay? Do you think that's okay? And if you don't think that's okay, do you think piracy, quote unquote, is the answer? And if you don't think that's the answer, and you don't think it's okay, what should Nintendo and Game Freak do about it? Because the answer is they should release all this on the 3DS store. Not the 3DS store, but the Switch store or the online store. It should all be available for download.
Mm. Yeah.
And I think realistically, people will buy games again. They will. I don't think they should have to. But they will.
And this is, and we'll wrap up this section in a second. But like, this for me is the other annoying thing is, you know, I own Pokemon Yellow over here. It's I've got it. It's mine from when I was a little boy, when I bought it from the shops for my birthday. I then paid for it again on the 3DS. So, but I paid full price for it. What happens then when they release it again on the Switch at some point? I have to pay full price for it. Like, why am I, again, paying full price for something that I already own? And what functionality have they added? Not a lot. It almost feels like there needs to be a thing of, oh, you originally owned this game? Well, we as a company, because we put this game out on multiple consoles in the same company, so 3DS, Switch, whatever comes after, you don't need to pay for it, or you just need to pay, you know, an additional couple of pounds because you already own it, but there are additional fees to gain it on this console, so you need to pay a little bit extra.
But like, then how do we get that Skyrim money?
Well, this is the thing, and I guess my point is that, you know, the game industry has had it good for a very long time in terms of doing everything they can to screw every single penny that they can out of their customers. And people fall onto two lines of, you know, some people will be like, oh, well, I love Nintendo. That's absolutely fine. I will happily give my money to Nintendo. Your money, just do whatever the hell you want with it, I guess. And then you've got the other people on the other hand that, you know, Nintendo are bad. I'm just going to pirate everything. I think neither of those are right. There's elements in both of that. This is why piracy isn't black and white. It's there's a big gray neutral area in the middle that everyone will fall down differently on based on, you know, your morals, your thoughts, your history, whatever it might be. But it feels like the game, you know, people are already talking about a gaming industry crash because of how many companies are laying people off and slowing down development. And, you know, these big multi-million pound games are just starting to become a little bit unrealistic in terms of the sales figures they're hoping. It feels like a gaming crash is coming. And for me, it should be a case if we look at these companies and go, well, actually, is it your greed that did this? Okay, how do we make the gaming industry more consumer-friendly? And, you know, part of that is making sure that if it goes back to where we started, I guess, kind of your point there, you know, if there is functionality that's no longer available, then you need to open source it in some way so the fans can take over.
But it's fine because the game industry isn't going to crash because all those layoffs are just going to be easily replaced with AI because that's the way the world's going.
Apparently so. Let's move on to... I want to move on to the... I'm just very conscious of time. Item duplication. Let's be really quick. So some Pokemon Scarlet and Violet geniuses have discovered an exploit that can generate infinite Master Balls and other rare items just by altering the Nintendo Switch clock. How do they do this? Well, over on Twitter, a person by the handle Saibuna Switch has discovered that the item printer, so the item that is available in Blueberry Academy in Scarlet and Violet, which is basically a machine where you put in a load of parts and it randomizes some items that you get out of it, such as Pokeballs, evolution stones, held items. There's a majority of, you know, a load of different things that you can get. They've discovered that you can manipulate this to generate certain items. There's a very elaborate way that you do this. I'm not going to break it down how you do it. There's basically you turn the switch off at a certain point, turn it back on at a certain point. You make sure the time is set to a certain date or time, depending on the items that you want. And there's even a calculator tool to allow you to do this. Now, all sounds very exciting and very fun. You had a very good point earlier on, which I feel like just opens up the floodgates again. But hey, comments are comments. We welcome them. Connor, what was your point?
So if you have, because if you clone a Pokemon, that Pokemon's technically not legal for competitive, right? Yeah. If you hack in a Pokemon, if you hack in an item, it's not legal. If you utilize a glitch within the game to attain a Master Ball and then use that Master Ball to catch a Pokemon, whether because it's shiny or whether because it's a legendary or whatever the case may be, is that Pokemon legal? You have used no outside influence. Everything is in-game.
In the game. That's the... yeah. And if anything, it is just a way to save time. You could sit there and it
reminds me a lot of like the Mew glitch back in the day, where you used to be able to do like the rare candy duplication and things like that.
Yeah.
And that's how you would build a competitive team, because nobody was grinding for that long. You just did the rare candy cheat. Yeah. So it's just one of those funny things of like, where do you want to fall on this?
Yeah.
How deep do we want to cut it where it's like, no, that's okay, but that's not okay? And the answer to me has always been and will always be, let them all use steroids. Just give us
give us the monstrosities.
Just let us have a Pokemon Pokemon Showdown. Just let us have a Pokemon Showdown.
Did we speak about I looked into why Pokemon Showdown is allowed. Did we speak about this? We never talked about it. We didn't. So I haven't got the notes in front of me, but I'm trying to remember. What I managed to find online is that someone, either the Pokemon Company or Nintendo, had reached out to Showdown and basically said, you're okay to use this as long as you do not monetize, you do not put it on mobile. And there was a third thing that I can't remember what it was.
Interesting. Why not on mobile?
Good point. I don't know why not on mobile. Because technically you can play it on mobile. I can play it on my mobile phone, just not as an app. Because you just go into the website.
Why not on mobile?
I want to find out more about this and figure out why this, because it's always blown my mind as to why Showdown is even a thing. Because you would think that Nintendo would go, hold on a second, you're using our assets? Check. You might have built it backwards, but you're using all our mechanics.
Mm.
You know, you have got this functionality that enables players to basically, if you want to use this term, hack Pokemon. It's like, oh, I want a level 100 chance with these moves, this ability, with these EV spreads, I can just do it all there. Like, you know, and then they can then build that in game, in their actual real game that's allowed. But it feels like something, based on what we've spoken about over the last couple of months, Nintendo would come down on and go, well, hold on a second, you might not be monetized, but you've crossed a line here. It's very interesting why it's still a thing. Anyway, yeah, it's strange. We need to do a topic on this at some point.
Yeah, I'd love to. I think it'd be nice to actually try and maybe reach out to someone at Showdown and be like, what's going on? How does this work?
Tell us. The item duplication glitch that you can do. I wrote this for last week's episode that we didn't put out, or we didn't record. So it might have already been patched at this point. I don't know. Do you think it'll be patched this late on? With, you know, just around the corner, we've probably got Legend Z2A.
Maybe. Sorry, I missed what you said about what are they patching?
No, they might patch it. I'm surprised they haven't patched it.
Oh, right. I don't know if they've still got people working on it.
Actually, that's a valid point. Yes.
Like, the teams are not big enough. No. They'll have some people working on Z2A, and they'll have some people working on Gen 10. I don't think they've got the bodies to dedicate to fixing the game now.
Which is interesting, because if people know that they can dupe Master Balls in this, and then trade them, would they be able to trade them up to the next generation? That's interesting. Trading isn't done the old way anymore, is it?
But you'd have a Pokemon holder and just put it into home.
I don't think items go in home. I'm pretty
don't
sure
they? Can
no.
you have a Pokemon hold an item in home?
No, and the reason I think I know this is because there are certain Pokemon that have evolutions that require the items. For example, or items to unlock forms, Zamazenta, Zacian, they require items, but you can't put the items in Pokemon Home. The Pokemon can be deposited into Pokemon Home, but any item the Pokemon was holding will be put into the bag. So actually, these items are stuck in this generation. They're not going anywhere.
That's really weird.
Yeah, and it's just that you I agree. Like, it's weird to me that you can transfer Pokemon into home and into the next generation, but not items. Which
you're right, Zamazenta and Zacian need the Rusted Sword and Shield in order to function.
Yeah, and there's that possibility that one day there'll be a game where they just get, oh, we're not including those items anymore. It feels like items should be a thing, though, because, and the reason why is because the amount of items I have in Sword and Shield, in Sword and Shield, that I've also got in Scarlet and Violet, and I've had to grind to get those items. I've got them in Sword and Shield, especially just if let me transfer about, them up.
Especially if you're talking about like competitive items and things like that.
Yeah.
Where it's a case of, I've just booted up the game, I want to play some online, I'm going to bring over my old Pokemon, I'm going to bring over the old items, oh, I can.
Yep. They make some weird decisions, we've established this.
Cool.
I guess none more weirder than Niantic's obsession with 420.
This is so stupid.
It's so stupid, but I wanted to cover it. So... for the third year running, Pokemon Go is unofficially celebrating 420. What do I mean by 420? The 20th of April, but in certain countries, they put the month in front of the day, so 420. 420, for those of you that might not know, is a certain type of medicinal plant? Recreational plant?
I think it's just slang.
Yeah, for smoking stuff. Which... you know, fine, 420.
It's legal in most places now. It's fine. I think we're allowed to talk about it.
What's that got to do with Pokemon? Well, Niantic has announced that the Pokemon that is in the next community day on 420 is the Grass-type Bellsprout. The Grass-type Bellsprout with a number 69, just to increase that meme ability. Oh, not only that, the Pokemon will also gain the new magical attack, Magical Leaf, again, 420. Ha ha ha, well done, Niantic. They've done this previously. Last year's 420 was the mythical grass-type Pokemon Shaymin, and the one in 2022 was Cherubi, whose Pokedex number is 420. So, well done, Niantic! Like, sure! Someone's but having it, fun!
The question was, like, Nintendo and Pokemon have such a squeaky clean image, and they work so hard to maintain it. I don't know.
It's so, you know why I think it gets through, actually? It's the Shrek humor. So Shrek is one of those films that children can watch and like, haha, that's very funny. But then there are bits of humor that only grown-ups would get. And the one that I always remember is in the second Shrek film when they arrest the cat. They pull something out of its bag, and it's obviously white powder in a bag, and the cat goes, oh, that's catnip. Obviously, it's not catnip, but as a kid watching that, I was like, oh, it's catnip. As a grown-up going back and watching, I'm like, oh, I see what you've done there. It's a joke that just goes completely over the head of children, but the adults get it and appreciate it. Mm. I think that's how they get away with this.
I think maybe, but... I don't think that is an adult joke. I think that's an internet joke.
Yes.
And the youth are more on the internet than we are. So I think 420 and 69 is one of those. It's actually not even necessarily adult humor. It's very childish humor.
It is actually, now that you're saying it, these are things that I knew about like 15 years ago.
So that doesn't hold up for me.
No,
the kids won't get it. Yes, they will. Yes, they will. And even so, it's still comparing Pokemon to what is very often an illegal substance.
Yes.
And if not an illegal substance, at least a mind-altering substance. Like, this is the same company that, when they released Red and Blue overseas, had to have the old man not have his coffee in the morning because him being drunk wasn't acceptable anymore.
Yes. Yes.
And now suddenly we're promoting 420? Come on! What are we doing here? Like, I'm fine with it. Crack on, blaze it, enjoy. Yeah. But
just trying to understand it. It's just so
clear lines. That's all I want to know. Where's the line, Nintendo?
So I think there's something to be said of the marketing of Niantic at the moment. Because on one side, we've got this, and we've got this very strange 420 humor going on because it will appeal to some people. And then we've got the flip side of the marketing where recently Niantic released this 15-second video called Coming Soon, New Pokemon Go Updates, which we spoke about on the 11th of April when it came out. This video revealed absolutely nothing. I went into the comments. I went into Reddit. I went into Twitter. I went everywhere I could go, and nobody had any clue what the heck this video was supposed to reveal. There was no content. There was no information. Context. There was no information. It was literally... I was confused. Were you also confused?
Yeah, massively. It is, yeah. For those of you who haven't seen it, it is effectively a guy sitting in a pub. A Pidgey lands on his table. He looks out the window and a kind of portal opens into the Pokemon Go world and a bunch of Pokemon walk out. And that's it. There's no words. There's no nothing. We don't know what's going on. And they released a new video a couple of days ago to expand on it. And they clearly heard the audience because they were like, oh, right, we need to write what this is about. And it says stuff like, rediscover Pokemon Go. Rediscover the world. Rediscover Kanto. Rediscover your friends. And it's like, what does any of this mean? You're still just showing me random environments with a Pokemon Go portal opening up.
So you've not done a very good video when you have to use the description as a tool to explain what the video should convey. So the video is called It's Time to Rediscover Go. And the video feels like if this video had been released at the launch of Pokemon Go, you wouldn't be able to tell. It is just that generic people out and about, there's Pokemon wandering around in the real world. But it's even more obvious now because when I was younger and I remember the Pokemon Go trail, I was like, this is so cool, Pokemon in the real world. But this video now feels hollow because it's like, well, no one's interacting with the Pokemon. They're all on their phones and Pokemon are just running around doing Pokemon stuff. But there's no interaction. You know what it made me realize? Like, if you want to relaunch or add some added functionality to Pokemon Go, let me have AR on, and as I'm just wandering around, I can see the Pokemon rather than having to tap on the Pokemon. You get what I mean?
Yep.
That is what I want to see. I want to go to a park, get up my AR, follow it around and go, oh, there's a big gym over there. Oh, there's a raid over there. Over there in the corner, there's a little pink blob. It might be a Chansey, it might be a Jigglypuff, and as you get a little bit closer, you go, oh no, it's in focus now. I can see what it is. I don't need that Pokemon. I'm going to turn around. Oh, there's a shiny Pokemon over. Like, that's what the next evolution of Pokemon Go could be. Should it be that? I don't know. I don't know if that gimmick would get old relatively quickly. I don't know, but I must admit there are times when I'm driving around or walking around and I know there's a Pokemon gym somewhere and I just think to myself, wouldn't it be cool with some kind of AR that I could then see that gym just there? That'd be phenomenal. That's the next update I want to see.
However, it almost looks like they're going in the opposite direction. So instead of it now being AR and you can see the world, it seems to be that they're advertising that there's better backgrounds.
So
is that what it is? Not when you're on the map, the map still looks the same.
When you tap on a Pokemon, so
their backgrounds represent where you are better.
So not everyone has this. I do. I got it about a month and a half ago. I must admit, it's not. It is really nice. You are, you know, in a city, you click on it, and it's got, like, cityscape in the background. If you're near a body of water, it'll have body of water in the background. It's nice. It is nice. It's a nice little feature. I've heard people saying that it drains the battery. I can't say I've experienced that, but I guess it depends on what model of phone you have and how old it is, because we all know there are, you know, parts of Pokemon Go. Like any mobile game, the more you use it, the more it'll drain your battery. That's just how batteries work.
Yep.
They're a nice feature, though. They are a nice feature. And you know what? I haven't really got anything bad to say about it, to be honest with you. I do enjoy being able to do that. That's part of what this Rediscover Go seems to be about, of, oh, if you've not played Pokemon Go in a while, come back, look at all these new features, because the description also says, discover a fresh new look with an updated in-game map. I have got that. It's nothing great. It is literally just the same old, that green and grey with a couple of extra bumpy elements and stuff to kind of show, oh, there's a bit more going on. Encounter screens, which is what we just touched on. Battle screens, I don't think I've seen. And more, all tailored to your location, from lush forests to bustling... Okay, right. And now that I'm reading more about this, I'm like, oh, this is pathetic. I was ready to slightly try and defend this, but now I'm just... Yeah, I get what they're trying to go for, but you know what? I figured this out. We're getting another video on the 17th, and then one on the 22nd... and then one on the 7th of May. And the reason I know that is the bottom of that description in the video, there's a link that takes you to a website. If you scroll down the website, there's four little boxes with lock icons next to them, dates and titles. So we've got coming soon, 17th of April, Rediscover Yourself. And the next one, 22nd of the 4th, Rediscover Your World. 22nd of the 4th, Rediscover Kanto, because we've not been there enough times. And then the 7th of May, Rediscover Your Reality. So the last one's obviously AR of some kind. Kanto is obviously, let's roll out the Kanto Pokemon again because people love that. Rediscover Your World is probably the global rollout of all the backgrounds. Mm-hmm. And the Rediscover Yourself is the global rollout of the updated character customization. So this looks to be, how do we get older players in and hopefully there's enough new content to get them to stick around? Which, okay, sure. Could you have done a bit of a better job with the videos? I think so.
Yeah, massively. They definitely needed to do more.
It's so strange. But I guess as somebody, Connor, that doesn't play Pokemon Go, does this do anything for you?
This isn't anything.
Nope.
This is not adding functionality. This is a coat of paint and not even... much of one.
Fair enough. Yeah, I can see that. Coat of paint.
There's a cool thing. Take your Pokemon photography to new heights with our updated Go Snapshot experience, which now allows you to include up to 3 Pokemon in a single photo. Is that like having the Pokemon out with you and they're behind you in the AR function? Or is this going to be trying to capture that Apple Vision Pro nonsense and go, well, actually, you don't have to take a picture with the Pokemon because your avatar is you, and we just spent all this time updating your avatar, so we'll just have your avatar with all your Pokemon around you.
Oh,
and
I hate that.
And that's you, because we're all moving into the metaverse now and real people don't exist anymore. You are just your avatar.
Great, just what I want. Yeah.
Yep.
I think if they wanted to do this Rediscover Go, yes, this all this added backgrounds, updated backgrounds, way to, you know, create your character customization, they are not even quality of life improvements. They are a coat of paint, like you said. Okay, they aren't going to get people into this. The way you are going to get people, I think, into this is by showing off, oh, okay, you haven't played Pokemon Go since launch. Look at all this added functionality we've now got. And, you know, fair play to Niantic. They didn't just release a game and then sit on it. They have added, innovated, and updated. The gym's got a major overhaul. We've had remote raids added. We've had routes. We've had party ups. We've had, I can't remember if I've said raids. You've had the ability to unlock research. They've added online battling. They have, granted, updated the game that they've got. Is there still issues with that game? Undoubtedly. There are issues with that game, especially for rural players, remote players, or players that have some form of disability or something that prevents them from getting out and about. That is what I think I'd like to see addressed next, to be quite honest with you, which I think probably leads us quite nicely onto the next comment, and then we can kind of wrap it all up. What do you think?
Yeah, I think sorry, I'm just looking at the headlines for the next ones. You got, as you say, on the 22nd of April, May, April? April. 22nd of April. Rediscover Your World, Rediscover Kanto. Okay. Kanto's a weird one that, what, they're just going to release all the Kanto Pokemon again? Are they updating the models for all the Kanto Pokemon?
No, they're not. I don't think they're updating models. I don't think so. It'd be nice, but I don't think so. I think it is because it's not an issue. I don't think it's an issue, but the can't think of another way to describe it. One of the issues that Niantic has is it's been going on for so long. I've been playing since day one. I have the majority of my Pokedex completed. So when they cycle out Pokemon, I'm okay because I've already got them. But new players, you could join in and go, okay, I'm ready to jump back into Pokemon Go. I haven't played it in several years. And then suddenly the Pokedex is unlocked. And you are looking and going, oh, there's like 600, 700 Pokemon in this game now and I've got 100 of them. But you can't just go out and get those Pokemon because they might not be in active rotation at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Or if they are the rare spawns. Rediscover Kanto is almost that way of you're getting back into it, we can hit on that nostalgia, and even if you can't complete all the rest of the Pokedex, you can at least go back and complete that original 151.
Yeah, okay, I get it. Rediscover Your World? Do you think they're finally going to let us just like... So, you know how back in the day people used to use... like maps. It was basically a map hack where you could convince it you were walking around over in Asia.
On Pokemon Go?
Yeah. GPS spoofing.
I used that and got I used that on my old account and got banned. That was fun.
So
because
how
I was a
cool would
player.
It be if they basically turned around and went, okay, it's a thing that much like how Remote Rage used to be. You only get so many a day. And then you can purchase more, but it's a, you know, jump on the hot air balloon. We'll take you to this location.
Oh, that's great.
We'll take you to this far off location for an hour. You get to hang out there. As you walk around, your character is exploring this new area and you get to go and, you know, catch the Mr. Mime, catch the Kangaskhan, catch all those Pokemon that are region locked for a fee.
I wouldn't do it, but I think a lot of people would.
Yeah.
Because that, Connor, like, fair play, that is a phenomenal idea. How they haven't implemented that or something similar to that blows my mind, because it's a way to unlock extra content for people that, you know, like me, in a rural area, or people that maybe want those Pokemon that... aren't available in their region, or people that want to take part in the Go Tours, which are, you know...
Which was my next thought, yeah.
Region locked in some degree. There are elements that it doesn't matter where you're playing, you still get elements of those Go Tours, but to get the full experience, you need to pay a lump sum and go physically to a location. This is a way around that of, okay, you want to take place in the next Go Tour? Well, it's going to cost you X amount, and it doesn't matter where you're playing, because, like I say, plopped in a location and suddenly all those Mega Rayquaza raids that are only available in person, well, doesn't matter, you're not here in person, your avatar is here in person and therefore they get to participate.
Now there's obviously the argument of, well, the reason the Go Tours are so popular is because it's a bunch of people coming together to play Pokemon Go, and that's the experience that they're looking for and that's the feeling that they want, and if they open that up, maybe people would stop going in person and lessen the feeling for the people who actually went. I think that's fair. And I think if they turn around and said, no, we're not doing it for the Go Tour, I think there's an argument there. But I still think it'd be very cool.
I agree. Would, I'm going to keep asking this because I always keep asking you this, would that get you back into Pokemon?
I think if I had the ability, because my issue with Pokemon Go has always been two things. One, I just can't walk around as much as I used to be able to. And two, it kills my battery really quickly. So if there's a way for me to play from my bed while I'm charging my phone, I'll play Pokemon Go. I'll do it. I will play it. Yeah. But I just, the game isn't built for me as it stands. Remote raids came in and I did pick the game back up again.
Yeah. Yeah.
That started phasing out. I went with it. So, yeah. Yeah, I think it's strange, actually.
Yeah.
Especially if it's a case of like, oh, discover Japan, discover Australia.
Oh, yeah.
And they have these like localized areas, maybe around like landmarks and stuff like that. And you see the landmark in the game.
Yes. Oh, that is amazing. Because I must admit, the discs that you spin, and the discs are something in the real world that, you know, sticks out, whatever that might be. It might be a marker, it might be a location, whatever it is. Now, I only know this because I am now at the level I can add my own. They have to get voted for, but I can add my own. So when you see that there is a description of something, it's because somebody has taken the time to add that content in. And I am finding more and more, I don't know if it's more people, wanting to talk about the history, or they've taken pride in where they live or something. A lot of them are starting to have descriptions in. And I love just like going somewhere new on a walk with my family and just going, what is that? And you know what I do? Pokemon Go. And I look at the Pokestop, and a lot of the times there's a Pokestop and I look at it and I read it and it's like, built in 1938. This is what they, and I'm like, this is phenomenal. Again, could you imagine something similar? Like, the next one's in Paris, and then around, a certain area of Paris, you can see the Eiffel Tower in Pokemon Go. And if you click on it, you can spin it as normal. Maybe it's got a boosted power up you get double the amount of items or something, whatever it might be. But you also get a description, and it breaks down. Oh, this is what this is. Da, 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 da. Like, who loses in that scenario? I don't think anyone does. Everyone wins, right? Niantic gets their money. Rural players, or people that can't play as well or as often, get to join in. People that are there, like, they've still paid for a ticket and can go there physically in person, and maybe they have a couple of extra benefits. I don't know, but
you still get the swag bags and things like that.
Yeah,
and maybe like, as you say, you get certain products. You get so many Pokeballs and candies and whatever else you get for showing up to the event. Maybe you don't get those for remote. Okay.
Yeah.
Sure. You didn't have to pay for a plane ticket. We're good.
Yeah, well, that's it. Yeah, exactly. See, but everyone wins.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
Everyone wins.
Will people complain? Right. Probably. But I think as compromises go, there's one to be made there. We will keep you updated on this story and disappoint you all in a couple of weeks.
I'm looking forward to that. Let's move on to a Pokemon Go themed question that we have had last week, courtesy of Chaos Dragon, who says, as far as Pogo, I always hate reading Pogo. As far as Pokemon Go growing, I'm not sure what metrics they are using, considering last year brought a wave of layoffs. Accessibility is a huge problem for Pogo, and I think that will be a deterrent until it's addressed. Rural players continue to be abused and city players disproportionately benefit. I'd really like to see a rebalancing of experience, perhaps unlimited remote raids after 9 p.m. when all local raids are turned off. It's crazy to me that a video game essentially has a built-in curfew. Personally, I prefer the mainline games, but shiny locking brought me back to Pogo in hopes of getting everything in the mainline game that keep getting gated. So we've kind of touched on a few things there already. I think that Pogo growing and the layoffs, I think they're actually unrelated. As a company, you can still be growing, you can still be making more money than ever, but you can go, actually, we can scale back the team because there's 10 employees over there that we don't need because they were working on functionality that's now been implemented. They've served their purpose. We can get rid of them. It might be a case of, there are various reasons why company lay off employees. That doesn't necessarily mean that they're not growing or there's a lack of profit.
No, it means that they're convinced that they can replace them all with AI. You guys thought it was a joke. I was being deadly serious.
Yeah. More and more companies want to be able to do that, of You know, why would we employ, why would we employ someone to write the articles from scratch when we could get AI to write them and we pay one person rather than a team just to come in and just
tweak, edit them,
freshen them, edit them? And why would we play, why would we pay digital artists when we could just get AI to create the art for us and pay a smaller licensing fee? There are many examples of where AI is going to be used as the reason, but I think more the excuse, to basically gut workforces, place people.
I hope it bites them. I hope it bites them so hard.
I, for one, welcome our new robot overlords.
Oh, I will assimilate with them, don't get me wrong. But I mean, I've always been on that way, though. Like, you're talking to somebody who has trouble getting out of bed in the morning. You tell me you can replace my spine with a new robotic one? Yeah, please. Yes.
Yeah, I'm in. Do you want however, while you're at it? Yeah, sure.
Yes. However, we've also seen from every cyberpunk and dystopian future that unless communism becomes the only way forward, like, we cannot have cyberpunk in a capitalistic world. It does not work.
It's dangerous to think about. It's exciting but dangerous. But
not the topic
Pokemon
of this
Go. Not the topic of this podcast or this conversation. Pokemon Go. So I think Chaos Dragon, you are absolutely right. That I don't think I'd use the word abused, but I do think rural players get a short end of the stick compared to city players.
Which is odd because it's not, it wasn't really the fault of Pokemon Go initially, because it was built off the back of another game that made sense to have all its spots in the city. And it was also basically just built off Google Maps and its system. So we could forgive it 10 years ago.
Yeah.
They really should have done something about it by now.
And it's strange for me because, you know, in the Pokemon games and the anime, where do you find the Pokemon? Yes, there are a few in cities, but the majority of it are in rural locations. They're in the forest. They're in the caves. They're in all these weird places. They're in the wild. But for a game, like for this type of game, it doesn't make sense. But part of the issue is that it's based on mobile data. So if there's a load of mobile data in a location, they'll have more spawns. If you're in a rural location, well, sod's law, you're probably not getting anything because the only mobile data it's probably picking up is you, because you're in a field on your own. It's like, well, there's nothing around there, so why would we put anything there? It's a really strange one. And I think my issue is, as a casual player, doesn't really impact me on that much. It's you know, comes back to that argument of trying to balance it for players that maybe want to get into competitive. Someone in a city will have a advantage over somebody that lives in the countryside because the person in the city has more stops to spin, which means more items. They can catch more Pokemon because there's more Pokemon spawning. If they're catching more Pokemon, there's a better chance that they will get better IVs, you know, and maybe they get the tiny or the larger ones that they can then put into the Pokestops showcases to get more items. Like, it's this thing where it just builds and builds and builds and builds to the point where how is somebody from a rural community supposed to keep up?
And, like, you may not think it's that bad, but, you know, it's literally the difference between having to walk from like one end of the street to the other to go to two different Pokestops. To, I literally used to be somewhere where you could sit in one location and you would be at five different Pokestops.
I've had that before and it was great.
And you just put an incense on one and somebody else is putting incense on another, someone else is putting incense on another. Easy. And just sit there and spin it. And you don't have to move. And it, you know, when we're sitting here going, oh, well, you can't use remote raids and you can't use remote passes because it de-incentivizes people from playing the game they're supposed to be. But those who are in the rural areas, who are theoretically going out and walking around, are playing the game that you want them to play, are being de-incentivized. I hate that word now. It doesn't sound real to me anymore. More so than those sitting in the city, just sitting on their phone in a coffee shop.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, yeah, no, that's a very real point. I think, what about Chaos Dragon's comment about retooling the remote raid? So I've never thought about this game as having a curfew, but it does, because when you log on at night, there's just a lot less going on. It's almost like it shuts down. There's less Pokemon. There's not really a lot going on. There's no, you know, raid.
Well, the raid battles apparently do turn off at 7:45. That's it. There's no raid battles after that.
Okay.
I didn't know this.
So I think they must shut down in almost a tier system or something, because I have had raids that I've been able to join after I've played football on a Friday, which finishes at 9. So that there are some, but there are a lot less. Mm. And when I finish football, they tend to be like, I've probably only got 15 minutes after football, and then they're all gone. So I'm at the tail end.
9:30 is the end point. 7:45 is the last spawn. There you go.
Right. That explains that then. Okay. But it is weird that a game has a curfew, but unlike most other games where you play them in the safety of your own home, Pokemon Go encourages you to get out and about. And there are risks with that.
That's not even a secret. There was all the news stories about people getting their phones robbed from them and walking into alleyways and walking into rivers and all sorts.
Yeah. So it happens. This idea of unlimited remote raid passes after 9 p.m. or whatever time they wanted to put on that, I like that idea. I especially like that idea because it kind of balances it for everyone. Because those people that are already getting loads of raid Pokemon in the cities, well, you know, they still get to do that. But it helps to balance it out for those rural players who maybe don't get to go out and about or haven't got ones nearby and could perhaps use the built-in campfire app now to coordinate in order to hopefully get some of the raids, especially for those that are more difficult, such as the 5-stars or the Mega Pokemon. Do I think it should be unlimited? No, I don't. I think, and the reason why I think is because A, Niantic wouldn't allow that because it's they would probably see revenue drop off during the day. You know, boohoo, Niantic, whatever. But, you know, just to play devil's advocate. But I wouldn't want unlimited because then it forces me to kind of sit there, because I go through phases where I'm like, oh, no, I want a really good team for raid battles and doing the online battles, which I jump in and out of. I don't want that. I would much rather it be, okay, you know, between 7 and 10 o'clock, you get one remote raid pass every hour. Something like that that encourages you to go in every now and again. Do it. Okay, done.
Yeah.
Just rewarding that gameplay, rewarding you for coming back, but not taking over your life.
Yeah, I like it. I genuinely really like that idea. And again, like, this is not going to cover everyone. Everyone is an individual. But at least in my personal experience of the disabled community, we don't sleep well.
Yes.
Okay. We don't sleep well. We're always up in pain. So you know what? 9 o'clock at night, that's a great time to start playing Pokemon Go.
Oh, I love that. I think we've just fixed Pokemon Go, you know.
I think so. A couple of little tweaks there.
Between our ideas, we've opened it up to rural players. We've opened it up to players that, you know, want to stay at home or have to stay at home or can't get out and about. We've given people the ability to explore new regions, which is what Pokemon's about, and encouraging people to, you know, take part in these communities, whether or not in person or digitally. We've not asked them to give anything away.
We've said they can charge for all of it.
Yeah, we have, haven't we? Yeah, we fixed Pokemon Go. Niantic, I'm expecting that check to be in the post tomorrow morning, please. But I guess the question for other people, are you playing Pokemon Go? Why are you playing Pokemon Go? And if you're not,
what needs to happen to come back?
Yeah, what needs to happen? Because, you know, Niantic, as I've said, have added a load of content to this game. And if you are a free-to-play player, like, for me, I get proper value for money for Pokemon Go for the amount of, you know, time I've put in, and I've paid maybe £20 since it went live.
Mm.
I've got value for my money there. Interesting to know what other people think and what they'd like to see in there that they potentially would spend money on too.
Have we got another topic?
No, that's it.
That's it.
Dusty.
Oh.
We have been going for an hour and a half.
I know.
Which is way longer than I thought. But
I felt like we had one more to go. I'm losing it. It's fine.
That is it. It's the show for this week. And if you've gotten this far, you're just a top dollar, aren't you? Before we go, we'd really appreciate it if you could leave a review on the podcast platform of your choice. If you're watching on YouTube, then please do leave a like. And of course, subscribe, as it really helps the podcast out. If you've got a comment or question, features by leaving a comment on our podcast on YouTube, by emailing goldenrobpod@gmail.com, by leaving it on our Discord channel, or by using the hashtag goldenrobpod on Twitter. And if you didn't write all that down, it's fine. It's in the show notes. Connor, where can we find you?
You can find me on my YouTube channel at Captain Fidget, or on Twitter at Cap Fidget.
I'm Ben. You can find me as Professor Hoenn Gaming on YouTube and Professor Hoenn on Twitter. We'll be back next Friday for another week of Pokemon podcast content.
See ya!